Cash Considerations Chicago Bulls podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest, and safest way to bet on all things sports. March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day, right around the corner, Bet Online has all the latest news, scores, and odds to help you win big. The best part? You'll receive 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. So head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your literal free money. Plus, signing up is a great way to support the podcast you're listening to in your ears right now. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. It's BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway.
Over.
Get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I am Jason Pat, as always, joined by Ricky O'Donnell. Again, we are brought to you by Bet Online. Go over and check out betonline.ag. We are recording, talking after a Bulls victory for once. Our long national nightmare is over. The Bulls' eight-game losing streak is done because they beat a similarly god-awful Washington Wizards team on Sunday night, 126-117. The game was not really that. It was kind of close earlier, and the Bulls blew it open in the second quarter. We saw Kobe White. We'll talk about him more later. Had another huge game, 33 points off the bench. Zach LaVine had 32 points. Thaddeus Young had 25 points and 5 three-pointers. The Bulls hit 18 threes. They were 18 of 37 overall from three. They shot 56%. They did have like 28 or 29 turnovers, which that has been an issue lately. But yeah, so the Bulls finally back in the win column. They're 20 and 38. I think there's still five games behind the Orlando Magic. Obviously, the playoffs or whatever at this point. The Bulls coming out of the All-Star break. They lost a horrible game to the Charlotte Hornets. They got beat up pretty bad there. And then on Saturday night, they lost to the Suns. They blew a 17-point lead. Kobe White, again, also had 33 points in that game as well. So it was a career-high 33 points in both nights. Made some history in the process. The Bulls kind of tweeted out, I think Kobe is the only Bull besides Jordan to have consecutive 30-point games. I saw ESPN Stats and Info said something about how he's like the only guy to come off the bench to score 30 points, or maybe the only rookie to score 30 points consecutive games. So big games for Kobe White. The Bulls, obviously, they're still kind of trash. But I guess in general, yeah, shout out to Kobe White. He has been kind of quiet lately with his performances, just kind of hitting that rookie wall over the last couple of months. So to come out here with these couple games to put up 33 points consecutive games. He had 7 threes against the Suns, 5 threes against the Wizards. Pretty efficient overall. I know, obviously, he's still mostly just kind of a gunner at this point, but the gunning had not been going well, so to see him shoot really well was great. I know there's been a lot of talk, and I think we talked about in our last podcast about should Kobe start or come off the bench. He just had a quote after this game that it doesn't really matter. I mean, and if he's playing 34 minutes tonight, he's been playing pretty big minutes anyway, so I guess ultimately it doesn't really matter if he's going to be playing those big minutes. You could probably argue that getting him more time with Zach, getting him more time against like first units probably could help him, but for right now, you had a good tweet. I think it was either during the Hornets game or after the Hornets game or before the Suns game. It was like something about Ryan Arcidiacono being the starting small forward and how every season, bowl season gets worse. So Jimbo has been going with Ryan Arcidiacono with Chandler Hutchinson's out, his shoulder's hurt again. Obviously all these other guys are out. Chris Dunn is out, but Kobe White, good to see him play well. You have any takes on Kobe White just in his big performances these last couple nights?
How you doing, Jason? What's going on? It was nice to see Kobe have a couple good games because the reality of Kobe's rookie season is that he's been one of the worst players in the NBA throughout the year. Which isn't totally unusual. That also happened to De'Aaron Fox, I believe, a couple years ago. He had a big sophomore jump. Kobe's going to need another similarly big sophomore jump. And what we saw the last two games, putting up 33 points in both of those games, it's funny what making a few outside jumpers will do for you. He makes 7 of 13 from 3 against Phoenix on Saturday and against Washington today. He goes 5 and 9. He had 26 in the first half today. Absolutely caught fire. So it's good to see Kobe get some confidence going and actually put two very nice games back-to-back on an actual back-to-back, one day after another. Like I said, though, this year his numbers are very bad. According to Raptor, which is the 538 all-in-one stat, he's been the worst player on the Bulls with a minimum of 800 minutes played on the season. He's negative 3.6. Thinking of it as, like, zero is average, and Chris Dunn leads the team with, like, a plus 2.6. He's a plus 4 on defense. So Kobe is, you know, the in these all-in-one stats, like Raptor, another one is...
PM. Like RPM, I think he's bad.
RPM, he's in the 400s. In PIPM, he's the fourth worst rookie. So, and then, you know, you just look at his field goal percentage. I think his field goal percentage on the season is what, like 36% or something? And now he is up to, so it's 37.3% from the field. Now he's up to 34% from three-point range, which is encouraging. Shooting 76% from the line. So, I said this when the Bulls drafted Kobe. How good he would be would come down to how well he could shoot, especially off the dribble. He hasn't been a consistent outside shot maker yet. I do think he has some potential on that side. First of all, he's able to get up just a ton of shots, and that's kind of the bread and butter of his game right now. I believe he's like second or third out of all rookies in field goal attempts on the season. He's first in three-point makes and first in three-point attempts. Part of it's because he's mostly been durable, which has been good to see him stay on the court for most of the year. He does have a lot of room to grow. I think, you know, the first thing you look at for me is his ability to be like a live dribble passer. So I don't think he has great defense, and I don't think he has great vision, I should say. And I don't think that he's one of those guys who like passes someone open. He can like make an open pass, but he doesn't pass someone open, if that makes sense. And like you said, he's mostly just been a gunner throughout the year. So that type of player can still be valuable, I think, but you got to be a really good three-point shooter. So that's the area in this game that he's just going to need to work relentlessly on. And if that happens, I think that, you know, there's still a lot of possible good outcomes for his NBA career. There's no doubt about it. You could see him in a sixth man role. I think that you could play him off the ball next to like a more dominant on the ball player. And I'm glad that you brought up his minutes with LaVine, because I had those pulled up. So on the year, they've played 683 minutes together, and their net rating is negative 11.5. And it's mostly because the defensive rating is 118.9. So the defensive rating is absolutely sky high. The offensive rating, 107.2. That's pretty much in line. I don't have the Bulls' actual numbers in front of me, but that is exactly in line with what they are with Zach on and Kobe off, too. So, yeah, good to see Kobe string together a couple games. I do think it's been a rough rookie year for him. That's just the facts. Like, he has not had a strong rookie year in terms of impact and winning, but having a couple name games like this, I think it's good for his confidence, and hopefully he can close the season strong.
Yeah, I kind of think we figured that it was going to be like this for him. Be hot and cold. I mean, he's been really hot and cold. I guess mostly cold lately, but he had those few games at the beginning of the year where he went crazy, won a few games for them. Like I said, he's been kind of been a cold stretch lately, but these last couple games definitely nice. And yeah, I mean, like, when you're a rookie point guard, and like obviously just still a lot of development to do in that actual point guard role, and like you mentioned, instead of not being just a gunner, like obviously he's super young. Getting the consistency is going to be big. Like I said, hot and cold, it's been a thing all year. So yeah, I mean, I think most fans, at least most realistic fans, expected this kind of performances from Kobe White, just kind of up and down, inconsistent. He's not a guy like, I mean, we see like some rookies dominate. We saw Trae Young come on at the end of the year after a slow start, and he was great. And he's obviously one of the best offensive players in the league already. And he's not on a level of a guy like him or Luka or Zion has been going crazy. Those are special guys. Kobe White, though, like you said, still a lot of room to grow there. Still, I think, a lot of potential. Whether that's actually like a legit point guard of the future, I'm not totally sure, but I'm certainly not going to say no. Clearly, he can provide some fun scoring moments and all that kind of stuff. So definitely good to see that, because obviously this Bulls season has been just mostly atrocious, as they are 20-38. And again, coming out of the All-Star break, they just lay a complete dud against a bad Hornets team. And then they come out and they blow like a 17-point lead against the Suns. So just two really brutal losses coming out of the break before this win against the Wizards tonight. Nice to see. I mean, Kobe White, I feel like, is one of the few reasons to watch the Bulls the rest of the year in general. Like, obviously, they're going to get some guys back, which I'm kind of surprised Wendell isn't back yet. He told us at the Rising Stars Media Day that he was hoping that he was going to be back for the Hornets game, and now he's missed three games coming out of the break. Clearly, they're playing it super slow with him. Same with Otto Porter. He's just kind of taking a sweet time. Who knows when those guys will be back. But yeah, Kobe, a big storyline to watch for the rest of the year, whether he starts, whether he comes off the bench, getting him those minutes, getting in that development, hopefully not building any bad habits. Hopefully he can continue putting up these kind of performances in this, again, in this bad season. And I'm also want to get, moving on to Zach LaVine. He actually made some history today. Another kind of bright spot in a bad season. He is now the Bulls leader in three-pointers made in a season. I believe he passed Ben Gordon. He's got like 170-something. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but he's had a ton of three-pointers. Obviously, he was in the three-point contest. He hit, I think, six threes tonight. Another big game for him. And funny, just a kind of random note with him and the Bulls this season. He's been excellent in second game of back-to-backs, so call him Sega Baba. Him and the Bulls have been great. I think the Bulls are now like 7-2, and the Sega Babas, for some strange reason, they've been great when they when they're playing on a back-to-back. But I mean, Zach in general, he's obviously had a pretty darn good season. He was a borderline All-Star, and I was tweeting this the other day that I've grown just more appreciative of Zach and just like how he's handled this just another shitstorm of a season. He's a guy who has never played in the playoffs in his career. He's seen a lot of losing. And I feel like he's been a pretty good soldier. He's obviously a good player. We've talked about his flaws ad nauseum. He's miscast as number one guy and all that thing. But I mean, he goes out there, plays hard, works hard. He gets buckets for you. I mean, he has his off games. His decision-making isn't always the best and all that when his defense isn't good. We know all that. But and we've seen the frustration lately. I mean, in these losses, and some of it bubbled up big time after this Sun or during at the very end of the Suns game, and then it's kind of afterward. We had more Jimbo timeout time. Jim Boylan calling another late timeout. I think this time there was like 30 seconds left. They're down 10 against the Suns. Game over. Jimbo calls another timeout, and then great work by the NBC Sports Chicago cameras catching Zach, like basically like why the fuck are we taking a timeout down 10? It's not the first time this has happened. They asked about it after the game, and he's like, that's just what coach does, like blah, 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 blah. And obviously Boylan defended it. He defended it after the game, claimed that Zach has never come to him with like any to complain about it or anything like that. He said it. They asked him about it again before the Wizards game, and he basically said the same thing. And he's like, you know, some of it's just like defiance of losing. I hate losing. Blah 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 blah. Just all this. I don't know any other coach who does that kind of stuff. We've seen Zach get frustrated by a few times. Thaddeus Young gave a no comment. I feel like we've seen other coaches, other broadcasters get annoyed by it. Just the same old goofy, embarrassing stuff from Boylan. Like I said, I don't know any other coaches who do it, but it's something that clearly Zach has taken some issue with. Like I said, Boylan claims that they've talked about it and that they have a great working relationship. I feel like that might not be the entire truth. I guess we hammer on Boylan stuff like every week. There's something new and we have another one. Ricky, give me your Boylan takes on this latest kind of just mishap after this, during and after the Suns game.
Yeah, this dates back to last year, right? He did this against the Suns late last year in March when the Bulls were actually up by 15 or up by 14 and he took a timeout with under a minute left to set something up. He also did that in a game last year in March against the Kings. The Bulls were down 27 and he took a timeout with under 30 seconds left. And yeah, he did it again this year. He did it, he took a timeout, I think, with 10 seconds left with the Bulls down 7, against Philly in February. So, first of all, we really need to shout out Stefan Noe for doing a great job chronicling Boylan's weird timeout usage. Since he's taken the job, Stefan's really done an amazing job documenting that. So all credit to him for this. But yeah, I mean, he's been doing it all year. It's really bizarre. I think that in Boylan's head, he's like, well, we can't waste a single second. Like, even if we're mathematically eliminated, what we're going to try to do is work on an ATO so we can have a small victory. That's what Boylan's all about, small victories, yeah. Jason. Winning the first quarter, winning points in the paint, scoring on an ATO when you're down 10 with a minute left. Well, why is that? It's because he can't count any big victories. The Bulls haven't won many games since he's become head coach, so he's got to make up all this frivolous garbage to get himself excited about and to keep himself going. I think it's pathetic. I think it's unprofessional. And I think it's something that, you know, you mostly would only see out of a high school coach. People in the NBA do not do this. To my memory, there's no precedent for a coach taken a timeout when the game's already decided with under a minute left, just so that they can draw something up to work on it. And Will Gottlieb had a hilarious stat today that the Bulls are last in points per possession in ATO. So not only are the Bulls, taking ridiculous timeouts late in games because they want to work on their ATOs, but they're the worst team in the league at scoring off ATOs. That's per Will Gottlieb, so that's wonderful. I mostly just think it's funny and it's unprofessional, and yeah, I mean, the Boylan thing, it's just going to keep unraveling, man. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. Like, I was just looking this up because coming into the second half of the season, these first three games, home against Charlotte, home against the Suns, home against the Wizards, you had three games in 4 days, but there was at least a chance maybe the Bulls could have pulled off 3-0 on that, right? You would think, at least hypothetically. They have only had 2 3-game winning streaks since they traded Nikola Mirotic on February 1st, 2018. And both of those ended at 3 games. And remember before that, when Mirotic first came back from his broken face via a ridiculous Bobby Portis punch, the Bulls won 7 straight games and ruined their draft stock in the 2018 draft. Maybe they could have landed Luka Doncic without that. Since they traded Mirotic, they have 2 3-game winning streaks, no winning streak longer than that since February 1st, 2018. Just crazy to think about, isn't it?
That is absolutely crazy. Yeah, I kind of thought maybe they'd have it because they've been decently – I know lately since they're just really hurt, they really haven't been beating anybody. Obviously, they lost 8 straight games, but I thought maybe they did have a chance. And I know, like, they play the Thunder coming up. You expect them to lose that, but then they play, like, the Knicks. I think they have a game coming up against the Timberwolves. So I was kind of thinking, oh, yeah, but they're gonna put a nice little fake rally together until they play, like, the Murderers Row schedule at the end of the year. And so they come out, and again, yeah, they laid a huge dud against the Hornets. They got down, like, 20 points in the first set. They did make a comeback and made it interesting, but then they just kind of – folded down the stretch, and then they blow a big lead against the Suns. So instead of going maybe 3-0 or 2-1 against these bum teams at home, they go 1-2, and they got, obviously they needed the big performances today, beat the Wizards. It was kind of funny.
They could have won that Suns game, man. They were right in that. It was I think they had the lead with 6 minutes left.
It was, because I know it was like, it was definitely very close, and then they just, again, they fell apart down the stretch, couldn't get any stops, didn't score enough. DeAndre Ayton just absolutely torched them.
Great game for Ayton.
They were right. I mean, they were right there in both games, really. But down the stretch, they just did not win either. I mean, not the playoff thing is just not going to happen at this point.
They're five games out.
Yeah, 5 games back. It would take the magic of an easy schedule. It would take them choking big time, combined with the Bulls like going on a big run against a tough schedule, like. If they were going to do it, they were going to have to, like, basically win all these games against these shitty teams and to come out and go 1-2. Not great for them, but whatever. Probably for the best that they just kind of fall apart here. And again, it's nice to see when they have some of these big performances, when you get Coby White playing, having a big game. Great. Nice to see Zach have big games just so he can continue his nice season. But yeah, overall, not great. And I think I saw after, actually, with the Wizards part, the Wizards were again melting down. The Wizards are awful. The Bulls, and they're just that playoff race in general. Like, the Wizards come out, obviously the Magic, they're 24-32. The Wizards, I think, had a chance to get within like 2 games, I think, of the 8 seed. They come out here and they lose to the Cavs, and then they basically get blown out by the Bulls tonight. Bradley Beal had 53 points tonight, and they lose by 9 against a terrible Bulls team who turned it over 30 times. Like, they're a joke. The Wizards are a joke. The Bulls are a joke. The Hornets are a joke. The Magic are pretty close to a joke. Like, this race for the 8 seed is just quote-unquote race. It's just a complete joke, and it's just like, give me that 1-16. No, abolish the conferences. We don't need either any of these teams in this damn playoff race because they're all crap.
Yeah, it's too bad. That'll never happen, though, because the Eastern Conference owners will never agree to it, right?
Yeah, like, definitely not.
It all comes back to the money. They don't really care about putting on the most competitive profit or the most competitive show if it's going to cost a profit.
Yeah,
product absolutely. Is the word I was looking for.
After the game today, I saw on Twitter come across after this the NBC Sports post game show. I think there was some serious fire Garpax action. I think there was a chant, there was a sign. I think that 86 Garpax
was there.
Was there. So I guess we can use that to kind of transition here. There, obviously, we've talked about some of the rumors surrounding the front office, and I mean, at this point, they have to make a move. All signs are pointing to them at least bringing in somebody from the outside. We have talked about how as long as Paxson is still there and if Gar is still there, I guess if I wonder if Gar would accept the demotion. I have no idea. I feel like I can't remember if it was Casey or somebody else kind of hinted that, or it might have been Cowley, like hinted that, well, he's going to be offered a different spot, but that, like, I wasn't sure if he'd take it. I don't know. Either way, we actually had a name prop come up courtesy of Casey Johnson, reported that Pacers general manager Chad Buchanan is a candidate of interest for the Bulls. This is from last week. Again, he's a general manager, so I guess he'd be kind of taking a it'd be kind of a lateral move because the Pacers have Kevin Pritchard at president there. He's the main guy there, but Buchanan, he's 46 years old. He was hired in 2017 by the Pacers. He has been with the Charlotte Hornets, where he spent time as an assistant general manager under Rich Cho. He spent a lot of time with the Blazers, helped, I think, scout Damian Lillard, part of when they brought in Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge and the Gerald Wallace trade that ended up getting Damian Lillard's. It says, Casey wrote that he's widely known for his embrace of analytics. Our guy Sean Hyken was a Blazers guy who's out there. He said that Buchanan is widely regarded. I had never heard of the guy until now. Like, I don't, some of these lesser known GMs and all that kind of stuff, I don't know all about them. Just reading up on him, I mean, he seems like a reasonable candidate, pretty good resume. I mean, not great, but obviously you're never gonna be perfect as a GM. I mean, the Pacers have built a pretty good team the last couple years. I know one thing that people are talking about is, well, he's probably used to like dealing with a budget, being from Charlotte, and the Pacers are a smaller market team as well. And I mean, the Blazers have a big payroll now, but they're not exactly a big market team either. So I mean, Chad Buchanan, fine, great. Again, it doesn't really mean much. I think if John Paxson is still there, and everything that the reporting seems to indicate that Paxson will still be there, be the head decision maker. But Ricky, anything Chad Buchanan? I mean, it's really, well, yeah, not man. Exciting. Like
I wrote about it this week. I burned the Bulls twice in the last like 6 days, I guess, last week, yeah, because I wrote about how embarrassing they were during the All-Star break. And then I wrote that, you know, on behalf of the Fire Garpax movement, this rumored front office plan where Paxson keeps his job, Gar goes into scouting, they hire a new GM, Doug Collins is still around, Jim Paxson's still around, John Paxson's still around, still going to have a prominent voice. Joe Colley reported that it's still going to be a Reinsdorf-Paxson show. So on behalf of the Fire Garpax movement, Jason, we say this is not good enough. We do not accept this, and we need to keep going in because we can't let him off the hook. Someone has to try to show what it looks like to be accountable, and that's why I wrote something during the week basically pleading to Michael Reinsdorf, you know, be your own man, dude. Like, you don't need to follow exactly in your father's footsteps. I dug up a bunch of old quotes from Jerry from when Michael first got the job. He got the job in 2010. I read an interview he did with Melissa Isaacson from 2012 that had all these quotes from Jerry Reinsdorf being like, I want Michael to be his own man. I want him to run the franchise the way he sees fit. And I do think that, like, Jerry would allow him to fire Paxson if he wanted to. The problem is that Michael Reinsdorf just isn't going to fire his friends. John Paxson's his friend. Gar Foreman, you know, there's been some reporting on the fact that his wife and Gar's wife, I think, are pretty tight. They seem like they're just friendly.
They run Bulls charities together.
Yeah. And they just seem generally friendly. So, dude, Michael Reinsdorf, step up to the plate, man. Like, here's the thing. Your dad had the 6 championships, the Jordan dynasty. He had, you know, the White Sox World Series. You haven't done anything, Michael Reinsdorf, besides for be the son of a billionaire. So if you actually want to immediately get people on your side, what better PR move could there possibly be than just firing these two morons? And right, at the end of the day, dude, it's been 17 years. So, like, yeah, Paxson has had some success over this time. Perhaps it's unfair for me to call him a moron. I'm sorry that came out of my mouth, John Paxson, if you're listening. But, dude, he's had 17 full seasons. No one has that type of job security. And his record is pretty spotty. They have won one Eastern Conference Finals game, made one trip. So I just think that as long as Paxson and Foreman, as long as Paxson in particular, it's so much more Paxson than Foreman, because I think that Gar at this point is probably just happy to have a job. I don't think that he's someone who, like, another team would hire if he were to like be a free agent per se.
I mean, maybe they'd hire him as a scout, but I feel like, I mean, why would you hire him as a GM at this point? I feel like there's just a lot of bad that's like gone around about
him. So my thing is like, as long as Paxton's around, I just don't think it's a very appealing job opening. And then, so if you're someone like Chad Buchanan, like why would you leave a much better setup in Indiana to take the same job title in Chicago? The only way he would do it is if they paid him a lot more money. And the Reinsdorf's MO is that they're not going to pay a bunch of money for someone like that. So I would doubt very much that Chad Buchanan actually takes the Bulls job, unless there's something I don't know, like that he's unhappy working with Kevin Pritchard in Indiana or something else. But I think it's going to be hard for the Bulls to attract a top candidate with Paxton still around, still having Doug Collins around. And it's not good enough, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we've talked about that ad nauseum. Yeah, and I do wonder, like, I mean, I guess, like, why he would leave that. Again, the Pacers have been competitive. They're obviously kind of falling apart now. They lost by 46 to the Raptors tonight or something like that. And they've been really stumbling since Oladipo came back. But, I mean, whatever. They've been a really good team for several years now, just consistently competitive in a smaller market. I mean, I guess maybe just the idea, since the Bulls are a big market, theoretically, like the global brand, we like to hammer on that. I mean, maybe if they did give him the Bulls gave him a slight raise, I mean, maybe that would. And maybe maybe they'd make him, like, I guess technically, like, Paxton is like the executive VP. Maybe they'd make like Paxton the full-blown president, and they'd make like this guy like executive VP of basketball operations. I don't know, like a slightly better job title than just general manager. I don't know. It does seem weird, unless he just wants a new challenge in a big market like this, even though the Bulls don't always operate like, or rarely operate like a big market team.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, you know, the Bulls just want to be the Pacers. The Bulls don't aspire to be on the same level even as, like, the Lakers, the Celtics, the Warriors. They would be very happy with being the Pacers, which is just be a team that's, like, consistently making the first or second round of the playoffs, is good enough to fill the stadium every night. Bulls, there was a really easy way to do that. It was called keeping Jimmy Butler. If you had a Jimmy Butler, Spencer Dinwiddie backcourt right now, which was very feasible, I think that, you know, they would be able to accomplish what it seems like they want to do. Like, even when they traded Jimmy, I didn't think they really had they didn't do it because they had championship or bust aspirations. I think they just wanted to build something that they saw as a more cohesive, sustainable, younger, and most importantly, cheaper roster. So, you know, the Bulls, it would be great if they could be as good as the Indiana Pacers. And the fact that they're not is totally pathetic. And I just wish they would aim a little higher. I'm not using that as an indictment on Chad Buchanan because he might be a good hire. I don't want to, you know, give a full opinion on that quite yet. But in general, I just think it's going to be tough to attract top talent to that job.
Yeah, you mentioned the Jimmy Butler trade too. I had had some wine and was watching basketball and on Twitter on Friday. I think that was Friday night. Doing some drunk tweeting basically, and I was going back over the Jimmy Butler trade because this was Dwayne Wade weekend. Like, he got his jersey retired in Miami and all that. And I was just like watching some of the stuff with him and the celebration of Wade, and it just reminded me about how the Bulls gave Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo like $75 million, and they each played one season with the team, and how they basically just like I don't even know if gave up is the right word, but like didn't even like try to actually build like a sustainable winner under Jimmy Butler, which was always my biggest issue with that trade. I feel like once they did the Wade Rondo thing and they flamed out, like I was whatever trading Butler was like. Whatever, I kind of, the writing seemed on the wall given the rumors the year before as well. It was just annoying that they clearly just lost faith in him. They didn't want to pay him a potential supermax is one of the excuses they always like to put out. But the fact that they could have had several summers to try to build a competitive team without him. Say what you want about Jimmy, it could be a pain in the ass at times. Whether he can be the top guy in a title team, probably not given some of the other stars in the league, but I mean, the Bulls probably they could have used a couple summers, build a solid playoff team for several years. Maybe you're a top half of the Eastern Conference playoff picture team for a few years. If it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. But you'd still be, I mean, given what we've seen happen since, they've been a complete joke and a laughing stock. And that's just the thing that was most annoying about the Butler team.
Yeah.
They had a guy who developed him. I mean, I don't know how much credit you want to give them for developing, but he developed under Tibbs. And then they had a chance to build around him. They They probably traded Rose a year too late, but either then, they traded Rose, and I think everyone thought that, all right, they're going to try to build like a younger, they talked about younger and more athletic team around Jimmy Butler, and then they go out and sign Wade and Rondo, and then they trade Jimmy the next summer.
My thing was just like, they didn't get enough back for him, and because of that, you had him under contract for 2 years in the middle of his prime. Like, right. You could have just held on to him, signed him, and then traded him. It's like 2 years from now. You know what I mean? Like, who knows if Jimmy actually would have signed the Supermax deal. But to me, they pushed the reset button way too early for a deal that wasn't good enough. Like, I think that's the biggest difference to me between the White Sox rebuild and the Bulls rebuild. Because people have been pointing out, you know, the White Sox did keep Kenny Williams on when they hired Rick Hahn. But the White Sox also started their rebuild from a position of power because they made a very good trade when they were dealing one of the best players in the league with Chris Sale. They got a really good return. The Bulls did not get a very good return when they traded LaVine. It felt like the Bulls were like, yeah, well, that was the best offer we could get. What they should have done is tried to just keep him, build around him, sign him long term. Obviously, there was no guarantee. Maybe still would have ended up Miami. Who knows? But then you still could have traded him. You know, after he's locked up under contract, someone still would have taken him. And the return you got back, you know, you moved up, what, 9 spots in the draft? And you got back Dunn and LaVine. Like, I know Dunn was a top 5 pick, but, you know, LaVine was coming off the ACL. Dunn was really bad in his rookie year. I don't think that he really carried as much quote-unquote value at the time as, you know, a top 5 pick 1 year into his career would suggest. So, yeah, I mean, that's why the Bulls are struggling right now. There's no doubt about it. People don't want to listen to us relitigate the Butler trade. But,
I know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's why the Bulls are here right now. And, it's bad, Jason. It's very bad.
I mean, just unfortunate the way it has gone since then. They just never made like a good faith effort to build around him. Huge bummer. Just watching the Wade stuff this weekend, like I tried not to relitigate it. I've like mostly moved past it, but get a few glasses of wine in me and watching Dwayne Wade stuff in Miami, it pushed that button for me. So I was going off a little bit. Any other leftover thoughts? I think we basically covered everything. I guess looking ahead here, again, the Bulls play the Oklahoma City Thunder. The very surprising Oklahoma City Thunder have had a terrific season. A lot of people thought that they'd basically be in for maybe not a rebuild year, but a relaunch. Everyone talked about Chris Paul being washed, and instead he's in the All-Star game. He's having a terrific season, and the Thunder are 35-22 now. Making their way up the Western Conference standings. Remember the first time the Bulls and Thunder played, the Bulls blew, I think, like a 26-point lead. There was some controversy at the end of that game, but the Thunder have been on a roll, so that'll obviously be a really tough game. I guess we'll see if Wendell or Otto, if they come back, maybe one of them comes back for that game. We'll see about that. Again, Lauri Markkanen seems a little further away, and Chris Dunn is probably done for the season, or at least close to done for the season with his knee injury. I don't even know if we talked about that, but yeah, Chris Dunn's out for 4 to 6 weeks at least. That basically puts him right towards the end of the season. I'd be surprised if he came back. That injury looked bad when it happened. And the Bulls defense has basically cratered since he's been out, showing just kind of the impact that he has made. So that's kind of a bummer for him going into his restricted free agency. That's something we'll talk about in a future podcast. We'll wrap up here. After they play the Thunder on Tuesday, then they have like 3 days off, and then they go to the Garden to face the Knicks. The Knicks have been a little better under interim coach Mike Miller. They're obviously still bad. They're still the Knicks. I mean, that's a winnable game for the Bulls. But yeah, just 2 games this week since they have that big break in between the Thunder and Knicks games. So we'll see how that goes. I guess I would expect them to go 1-1, probably lose to the Thunder, maybe beat the Knicks. The Bulls did lose at the Garden earlier this year. And like I said, the Knicks have been playing a bit better. But yeah, that'll be it for this upcoming week. We're almost getting into March here, which obviously means March Madness. We'll start talking draft, especially with the Bulls being where they are in the standings. We'll start talking draft a bit more in March. Ricky, any final thoughts here before we totally wrap up?
Prediction for the week. Tickets for the Bulls-Thunder game, which is a home game on Tuesday. I'm saying that's going to reach single-digit ticket prices on the secondhand market. I'm looking at the StubHub prices right now. You can get into the door for $14. I'm saying that that's going to be like a game you could go to for $7, $8, $9. And I still expect there to be a lot of empty seats during that game because people are starting to tune out. Even with a couple good Kobe games, it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of hope, and there's not much at stake at this point anymore. So I think we're going to see some pretty bad attendance numbers the rest of the year. Just a guess already. If you want to go to this Thunder game, you can get really cheap tickets on StubHub right now. I'm sure they're just going to get lower, would be my guess.
Yeah, probably. And we've seen some pictures from these games recently. Like that Hornets game was very sparse. The weekend games, I feel, are still getting decent, some decent attendance. But yeah, these weeknight games at home, especially against just like lesser opponents. I mean, maybe the Thunder bring out some fans. I don't know. Probably not. But like a lot of these weeknight home games, if it's not like a high profile opponent, it is not drawing at all. A lot of empty seats. Last, I guess, thought here. I totally forgot to mention this when we were talking about Garden Pax. I believe they were in Iowa State over the weekend to do a little scouting. That Ames Mafia, all that thing, that made for some good jokes and fodder on the internet. So that was kind of fun. Look for anything to make jokes about at this point of the season. But I got nothing else. Ricky, you good? We done here?
I'm good. Thanks all for right, listening.
Thanks for listening. As always, Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls pod, brought to you by BetOnline.ag. Thanks again for listening. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your pods. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. As always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. Go check out all the other great pods across the Blue Wire Network. And follow Blue Wire on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. So this has been Cash Considerations, Chicago Bulls podcast. For Jason and Ricky, we will talk to you guys next week.